ever find a more wretched hive of scum and villainy.
Now tuned into the greatest. Turn the music up in the headphones.
All right, we're back on the Mega Podcast. We'll just call this part two.
Old G and Chops.
Chops and Old G. We've got... what I love about it is that neither of us are giving that up at all.
I am not giving that up.
Fucking 40 years from now, we're still going at it like this. So
With no teeth.
So, joining us for part two, Morgan Machina.
The Machine.
Who we've got a couple of interesting stories to start. Actually, you know what? Let's just go ahead and jump into present. We'll get to past in a minute because you were telling us a story that we just wanted to save for this because it's cool on how you came up. But I think the more interesting and relevant story is right now what happened for this main event. Mm-hmm. And what I like about this is I don't think that your story that you're about to tell is like you're the only guy.
No, it's not that, independent.
Yeah, I actually think you're probably one of a few people.
But it shows commitment.
But it's absolutely the most commitment. So tell us what you did to play this main event.
All right, well, I came out here and I figured I was going to... I usually bring about 12,000 out here when I come. And I try and play a lot of the smaller events and work my way up to making enough to get through all my events and have some more money. And hopefully... you know, do well and win my first bracelet. That's my goal. I'm out here to win a bracelet. So I came out for the first week. I played four events. I cashed in two of them. First one was like 130th place or something like that. It just
one of the 1500 cash.
Yeah, it was a min cash, like 1800 players. Then I played another 1500 event and I got 12th place, which paid a little bit more. I paid 26,000. So that was perfect. It gave me the 28,000 in money to free roll me in all the other events I wanted to play, including the main. So that's where I stand today. I came back, I played another four events, didn't cash in.
Whoa, this is the important part.
What?
Because he had to go home. He wasn't able to come back right away.
Oh, yeah.
The important part.
All right. I skipped over some stuff.
The key part.
Yeah, so I knew I had to go back because I was working for the Department of Justice for about 3 years as a project manager in software. And
as the mole on Chris Ferguson, just kidding.
So I had recently, like, I don't know, 2.5 months ago, quit that job and started a new job because I didn't like the way things were going over there. And so I started that job and I told him, I have to go. I have a vacation coming up in a month right after I started the job, right?
When you said vacation, did you do air quotes around it? Or you're like, I've got a vacation coming
up. Yeah, a vacation. So I had to take a week off after working for 4 weeks, which, you know, a lot of jobs might not like. But they were so cool with it.
But it's the summertime too, so.
Yeah. And so I know, this is my shot. I've got to come and do well at the first week of the World Series. So I did. I did well. But then I had to go back because I had a job and I made a commitment. Mm-hmm. And so I went back. But... in the time that I was here, I was also thinking that I didn't like the like super corporate structure that I was working under and, you know, all these egos that I was having to deal with. So I decided I'm going to quit. But I'm not the kind of guy who's just going to quit and go F you.
Right.
So I went back.
Said F you in person. Right?
And I gave them a week's notice. So I worked that 1 week and I had come to the decision I'd gave him news and said, you know, I'll work one more week. So I was back there for 2 weeks, so I had to miss a couple weeks of the World Series, which I didn't like, but I did it. And then I came back here. So is there anything I missed?
Let's just do the Cole's notes on this. So what happened was he came out here on his 1 week vacation after working for a month in this new company that gave him a job, did well enough that he figured he could play more events, went home, quit the job, came back, and here we stand today, an unemployed man in day two of the main event.
But you made it to day two, right?
I made it to day two.
Then you're living the dream.
Yeah.
He's working both things right now. He's looking for jobs.
Right.
But if the main event goes well, he's going to stop looking for jobs.
That's true.
So what... let's go through where your mind... I would imagine your mind is right now. Because now you're thinking, I don't have a job. I'm looking for jobs, but I'm in day two of the main event. Yeah. And there's certain levels of caching that are going to buy me certain amounts of time. Like,
yeah.
So, like, let's say you didn't make the final table, but you had in the $300,000 to $500,000 range score.
Yeah.
Is that, are you taking a year off, 2 years off? How much time are you taking?
It's not that I would take time off. Oh. I would probably start my own venture and use, like, maybe $100,000 to start my own venture.
Okay.
And I want to probably stay in the same industry I'm in and maybe do some, like, mobile software development, something like that.
Okay.
But I'd like to break into...
Oh, sorry about that. I had to cough there.
Yeah.
Because that's complete bullshit that you're hearing right now, Chops.
What do you think the real story
is? If he scores for $500,000, he won't work. He'll take...
He said 300,000.
300 to 500.
He said 3 to 5. If he scores $500,000, he will not work. He will not start a venture. He will start traveling the circuit and... following the dream that he's always had of being a professional poker player.
Has that always been the dream?
It hasn't.
It has not always.
Ever since I've known him, it has been. And he actually did it for a while. He was playing online. He was coming around to a lot more tournaments. Well, he had a business of home poker pros or some bullshit like that. He was doing.
That Gavin came and did some appearances occasionally.
He had some facade.
And it was all
business.
For charity, so whatever we gave Gavin, he just gave to the charity.
Okay.
He had some facade of a business before, but it was in his dream of being a pro poker player.
It was different at the time, too, because I was living in California, Southern California.
But the bottom line
years,
is,
and
he
I was
wants,
closer to all the tournaments.
He wants to be a professional poker
player. Do you want to be a professional poker player?
I don't think I'll ever want to be. Well, I think I kind of partly am a little bit, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, but it's more of a. It's not full time.
Right.
Do I want to be a full time?
Well, that's sort of the definition of a professional poker player. Is that it is
right.
Full time.
Exactly. So and so my answer is no. I don't ever want to be a full time poker player. I always want to be dabbling in something else that's interesting to me.
Okay. So what would it take? I'm skeptical, but it's fine. Would it take, like, binking the main event? Would it take winning the main event to just middle fingers up in the air and you walk away and you never play anything again? Or are you the guy that wins the main event and you play everything?
No, then I
play everything. You'll play everything.
Oh, my God.
If I won the main event, you'd never see me again, ever.
Bullshit.
I'm never going to win the main event, but you would not see me play another. Maybe would play the main event every year. It would be like that.
No, yeah. Morgan will be very visible if he wins the main event.
Morgan,
if I win the main
yes.
event, yeah.
I'm saying if I did, I'd be gone. You'd never see me again. If you, you're all over.
And I don't know. Maybe I would make a decision to just play poker because I can afford it and not have to worry about income from other sources. But, you know, I don't know. I've always got my inspiration to...
Do you have any other leaks? You're not in the pits, are you?
Yes.
Okay, but I'm not that bad.
There's a lot of other leaks.
I've had my...
Some of them we can't put on the radio show, but yes, he's in the pits.
Okay. I'm in the pits sometimes, but...
Not for stupid numbers.
Maybe... Okay. Well, I think I had stupid numbers in 2007 when I won $170,000 in a final table, and I think I blasted through about $40,000 in the pits.
This was the year that Morgan and I were... We were becoming friendly to start with, and this was the year that Morgan had a fucking hard on to get a diamond card.
I did.
At Harris. Okay. He wanted a diamond card more than that. He was like, Gavin, if we get this diamond card, we get through all the lines. It's amazing. We just need to do this. And you know, all you have to do is, he had it all figured out what you had to do. You have to pay $25 a hand blackjack for X amount of hours. He had it all figured out. And he got his diamond card.
You got your diamond card.
I got my diamond card.
You got his diamond card.
So if you're a guy that if you put your mind to something, be it a diamond card.
It costs a lot of money. but then that was the same year that I, in trying to get my diamond card with Morgan, which I got, but then I decided to take it one step further. And in one night of idiocy, got my 7-star card. Which was really stupid.
Was that worth it? Was it? Like, do you look back and was the story worth it?
I wrote on the back of that card, idiot card. Because that's really what it was.
So, we probably should have led with this. But what's your career earnings? Give us some of your at least live track record. We can keep the online stuff up.
As far as, like, tournaments and stuff like that, I think it's maybe $650,000 or $700,000, something like that.
Some serious
tournament winnings. I've cashed in 15 events now in the World Series.
All World Series, or are you doing anything
in
else?
World Series events, I've cashed in 15.
Okay.
I mean, I've cashed in other events, like the Commerce and, I don't know, other tournaments. But Yeah, it's 15, and I'm trying to think back and estimate how many tournaments I played, and I'm putting the number between like 75 and 80.
Okay.
So that's pretty good.
You'd say that you're overall a winning player. So
yeah.
He's up lifetime for sure.
Okay. Yeah, I'm up lifetime.
Okay. So
he's not a winning player,
in poker.
But he's up lifetime.
I might give it back somewhere else, but
right.
Yeah, in poker.
So before we turned the recording on, you were saying that you actually, and it's pretty freaking interesting, came up through the ranks with Phil Hellmuth.
I did.
Way back in the 80s. Tell us
about
that.
Way back in the 80s. And so I met Phil for the first time because we were both going to UW-Madison. That's Wisconsin. Mm-hmm. And we were both on the Ultimate Frisbee Club. And I wasn't that good, but I knew how to throw a frisbee, and I played on the team. And
Phil Hellmuth throwing a frisbee?
Yeah.
He's got that kind of coordination? Not really.
No comment. No, he was actually pretty good. He wasn't like the best player on the team or anything like that, but you know, he's long and he's got length, and so you know, if you got to lay out and grab the frisbee, you know, he's got some good height. And I played basketball here and there with Phil, and he's relatively coordinated.
Okay.
You know. So that's when I first met Phil. Then didn't see him for a couple of years.
We could do like a poker version of Twins. With these guys playing basketball together, right? Phil's 7'2" and Morgan's 4'11".
I went and played with Huck Seed one time in California. We were at the Commerce, and we just wanted to go play, so we found a place to play. And we ended up playing 2-on-2 with some guys. And obviously, you know, Huck's really tall.
Yeah.
He is super aggressive, like super aggressive player. The pounding that the guys took from Huck was awesome. And then I would just, you know, be on the outside ready to shoot in case, you know, they'd try to double
shoot. Shooting corner threes.
Yeah, exactly.
I would play aggressive basketball with Huck any day of the week. As long as there's no calling of fouls, I'm in.
I'm pretty sure you're going to get punished.
Yeah, well,
guaranteed.
I'm pretty sure he's going to know he was in a fight.
So we're like 1985, 1986, you and Hellmuth are playing.
84, yep, yeah, it was the 84. That year, and then
what career earnings for the machine?
About maybe two.
Let's see how close it is. What are your career earnings for the machine?
658.
Gavin's looking it up on his phone.
I'm
you fucking jackass! You don't even know what you've made.
No, I don't.
597.501.
Still solid.
That's World Series only or all tournaments?
That's all.
Is that on like poker pages, Hend'em Up?
Hend'em Up.
Okay. Hend'em Up, yeah. That's
year.
That's good authority.
Best year being 2005, $256,022. Quite frankly, since then, you sucked.
Yeah,
oh, no, before that, you sucked.
2007, I was okay.
Oh, no, 2007 was 194,709, and since then, you sucked. Yeah. Let's see how bad he sucked.
I agree.
So, 2008, $18,604. 2009, $4,671. The 2010. Zero.
Did you play?
Played in some events. Okay. For sure, every year he's played something.
Yeah, that's true. I probably played some events.
2011, $2,114.
That's a nice number.
2012. 2013.
A couple of years.
2013. Current year, $28,013. And still alive in the main event.
On the uptick.
See them all. On the uptick.
On the uptick. On the way up. So 1986, Phil Hellmuth.
Yeah, so 1986, as a guy I knew, Londo, that was a backgammon and chess player at the Union.
Okay.
And he kept telling me, hey, there's this poker game, you should come to Mixed Bar and play poker. So eventually I go with him, and it's this little 1-2 pot limit hold'em game. And Phil is, like, in this game, and it's kind of a regular game, and basically, that summer, I was working for the Department of Transportation as like an inspector on a road construction crew. Basically, every time I got a paycheck, I'd go to Mixed Bar and lose all my paycheck. So that was my summer, was learning poker. But I met a lot of good people. So Phil Hellmuth was there, and a really interesting guy named Tuli Harami was there, and very great at mathematics and understanding poker. Tuli Harami.
What about Dewey Wim? William.
Dewey's in that circle too. Dewey William.
He's famous. He's famous poker. He's old school. Famous WSOP player. Yeah.
So there's some good players that came out of Madison just because there were, I think, you know, Phil helped make people better. And you know how Phil has the
Was he really good back then? I mean, like, let's go 1986. So Helmuth wins the main event in 89. So, like, 1986.
Was he the best player in your game?
Yeah. Was he the best in your game?
Definitely the most vocal and aggressive player.
He was the most aggressive player. You don't think of Phil Helmuth as being particularly aggressive, let's say.
I don't know. I kind of disagree with that.
Do you really?
Yeah. He's very interesting because he makes the stupid laydowns.
Right.
Right, like retarded. Like really stupid. Like imbecile.
Right.
Like moronic. Like fucking dumb.
I'm not going to rip on Phil Helmuth's game.
Okay.
But
then...
Yeah.
Phil Helmuth's one of my best friends. I like Phil Helmuth. Yeah. But then he can really turn it up and play like... As aggressive as anybody in the game. Right. He can turn it up and play as aggressive as anyone in the game.
Yeah. And Phil... I think back then, maybe more so than today, where I think he plays more conservative and a little bit more solid, he's used to try and switch gears a lot.
Okay.
You know, and I mean, that was like one of the buzzwords about, you know, was being able to switch gears. And also, cash games are very different than tournament play, right? Like where you're trying to stay alive and win a tournament is very different than in a cash game where you can be more aggressive, and he was. We used to have regular games. We'd have, like, I forget, like, maybe 2-4 and 4-8, like, limit hold'em games. And we had a 5-10 pot limit hold'em game twice a week. And at that time, I had gotten kicked out of college because I did shitty and got kicked out.
Okay.
Engineering school. And so for about 2 years there, I was playing in all the regular games in Madison, and Phil was in all the games. And Phil was a full-time poker player at the time before he moved out west.
Did he kind of consider himself the greatest then?
Oh yeah.
Absolutely.
For
same,
sure.
Same guy.
He's the same guy, and definitely he was probably responsible for educating a lot of people in poker.
Sure.
Maybe not in the way they wanted to be educated about how to play poker better, but they were definitely educated by Phil because he couldn't hold himself back to tell them
even
what they
then.
Did wrong.
We're going to play a game right here now, just for fun. We're going to play Do You Know the Machine?
Okay,
here's the game. Morgan Machine, how many cashes do you have in the World Series?
15.
He's correct.
Okay.
Now, on Do You Know the Machine, I'm going to shoot out players. And the game is more or less cashes.
More or less cashes.
Then Morgan Machine, at the end of the
More or less total, not dollar.
Total
amount.
Number of cashes.
Okay.
All right, so we're gonna show some names here. We're going to start with Matt Gianetti. Final table.
Just WSOP cashes.
That will be cashes. More or less than Morgan Machine.
I say less.
I say less.
Okay. I'll let you know after. Jonathan Duhamel. More or less.
It's only since 2010. Yeah, he's probably just a little less.
I think less too.
Okay. We're going to go with Prince Jean Gaspard.
More.
You go with more?
I'll go with more too.
Okay. Let's go with Liv Waree.
I'm going to go just less.
I say less.
Okay. Olivier Bousquet.
Go more.
More.
Nice, nice. How about Dan Smith? Fucking king of poker last year, whatever.
Less.
Same.
Okay.
Isaac Barron, former online genius.
I'll go less.
Who? Isaac Barron?
Yeah. Westman Law.
Yeah.
Less.
All right. How about first woman ever to make Barbara Enright?
More. She's probably got a bunch of random seven-card stud cashes.
Well, she's played a lot.
Yeah.
She's got to have more cashes. I'd say more.
What about Yuha Helpy?
That's probably right in the range there. I'll say that's tough. I'll say more.
I'm going to say a surprising less.
Okay. How about the man who has the most cashes in the history of the World Poker Tour, Lee Markholt?
He's got the most cashes in WPTS?
Yeah.
No, we can't combine him and Lee Watkinson for this. It's just
Mark. No, it's just Lee Markholt.
All right. I'll say he has less cashes than 15.
And he's what? What's his statistic?
He's got the most in the World Poker Tour.
Most cashes in World Poker Tour history.
Must not play much WSOP then. No, he must.
Him in second to Lindgren.
To Lindgren this year.
All
this
right.
Year. Yeah.
All right, I'm going
for more. I want to know Vanessa Russo.
Man. She would have more.
Less.
What about Jason Somerville?
Less.
Don't know.
What about Cliff? Johnny Bax Josephine?
More.
More.
What about head of 441 Productions, Maury Escondani?
Less than 15.
Yeah,
sure. But not much less.
All right. The answer to all of these questions are they're the same.
They're all 15.
These are all people that have 15 caches.
That's a pretty impressive list.
That's a pretty impressive list.
I was right on one of them when I said same.
Right, you were. How about Stu Unger?
15?
Stu Unger has 15 caches.
You're in good company. Or bad company.
Like, this is pretty impressive. Listen as I go through this and see. Phil Locke, you actually have more. He has 14.
Wow.
It's a pretty impressive list.
It is. When you put it in that perspective.
Right. It was kind of a neat game.
Yes.
You know, match the we call the game now Match the Machina.
Yes. Match the Machine.
I like it.
Thanks to Hennemod, by the way, for having such a cool
think they're the best site, bar none, for statistics of poker players, because I pull up my list and I'm like, oh yeah, I forgot about that tournament.
Yeah.
And they've got it listed in some like little tournament I played at the like California State Poker Championship or something, you know?
So 1989, Helmuth wins the main event. What, were you guys friends at the time?
Well, he immediately changed his number and Morgan's never had his number.
did people understand how big of a deal it was back in Madison, let's say?
Yeah. Well, not everybody, right? So it wasn't like huge news around Madison.
It wasn't. Because you would think it could be.
Among the poker community, absolutely it was.
I don't
like,
remember back then. I don't even know. I wouldn't have known what a big deal it was back then.
Sure.
In 89, poker was just not as popular enough to draw attention. You might say, yeah, Phil won the World Series of Poker, and they'd be like, oh, really? And then you say it was for $655,000. And they'd go, oh, wow.
Right. It's a dollar figure that seems like it was.
Exactly. Yeah. That's the thing that was people would freak out about. And then, obviously, that pales in comparison to what winning a main event is today. But back then, it was a lot of money. Yeah. Maybe it was $755.
I don't remember.
You can look that up right now.
Good, look it up if you want me to. I'm really good at that shit.
Yeah, it was just, we hadn't gotten to the $1 million threshold yet, so it was probably around like that $750 or so.
Yeah, I think it was.
So
just heads up with Johnny Chan.
Yep.
Would have won back-to-back.
Third in a row. Would have been back-to-back-to-back. He'd won 87 and 88, so it would have been 89, would have been three in a row, which is kind of ridiculous, actually. It's pretty amazing. So after that, does Phil at that point, does Phil leave Madison? Does he come out?
No. As a matter of fact, I believe the first double date we went on, I think it was a blind date for him.
The first double, you've gone on multiple double dates with Phil Hellmuth?
No, that's not what I was trying to say.
That's what I get from that. Is that what you got too, Charles?
On that statement, yeah. That's where I was at.
I think it was Phil's first date with this person, Kathy, who he eventually married. And I can't remember.
Were you
it was
on
a
that
blind
date?
Date. And I think we went on a four-way date with them. Me and
you
Adrian.
Guys did a four-way? You, Phil Hellmuth, and his future wife did a four-way?
I'll leave it at that. So anyway.
That's pretty impressive. I don't think they've done four-way since.
Phil ends up marrying Kathy.
Right.
And I buy a house in Arbor Hills, which is a little area in Madison, Wisconsin. And Phil ends up buying a house, like, I don't know, maybe half a mile away or something like that. And they have kids first. We're friends. Mm-hmm. We're still friends. We're playing in poker games around town still. Because he's still coming back from Vegas between tournaments and stuff. And so he lives in Madison. So we remained friends, played poker for a long time. And I don't remember the year, but his wife, Kathy, graduated and then got did her residency in Stanford. Right. So they moved to Palo Alto, and they're still in that house a few blocks from Stanford today. I don't remember what year that was, but it must have been like, I don't know, probably, I'm guessing like 93, something like that.
Sure.
So Phil stayed in Madison for a while.
Cool. Well, I think we've got to make standard practice this Max and Machine thing. I think that's a I don't know how.
Match the Machina? I like it.
I like this a lot.
I like it a lot. Yeah, we'll do it. Okay. We'll call them up now and we'll do Match the Machina.
So, Morgan, we're going to check in with you maybe a month or two down the road. I want to know where you're working unless you've final tabled this.
Well, we may just do another podcast with Machina as he goes on.
As he progresses.
If he gets to day five, we will do a day five with the Machina.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, so I got $52,050 going into
I think tomorrow, the 50's
day two.
The 50?
He says it's $52,050. I think the 50 is the key.
The $50 is the key.
Right. That's the key.
The extra two grand checks. Yeah. Okay. So, yeah, let's check in. Let's check in soon. I'll let you guys know how I'm doing.
And you know, we're gonna root for you on this. We don't want to see you have to go back and work again. We want you on the circuit.
Awesome. Without question, we're going to be interviewing Phil Hamby soon, and we will ask him about this first four-way date with Morgan the Machine.
Yeah. He's got a good memory, so he might be able to help fix some things from that.
All right, so we will continue on with the Mega Podcast after this quick break. Main Event Mega Podcast still going on. Fifth Street Radio, got to check them out. Nice enough to let us use their facility for this. We've got 2005 Main Event Final Tableist. Third place?
Something like that.
Andy Blatt.
They recently did, by the way, a segment on where they were doing like beat the Kev Math or stump the Kev Math or something like that, where they were coming up with third place finishers.
Uh-huh.
I don't think any of them came up with Andy Black. Were you third place?
No.
I don't think one of them said Andy Black.
Fifth?
Fourth? I can't remember. It's so long ago. I mean, essentially, it was.
You were chip leader going in, right?
The internet wasn't even invented then. It was that long ago. Yeah.
So, do you still have any of the money left?
Not at all. Did I even ever have it?
Whoa, that's kind of like the whole of the tree falls in the forest thing, what is, right?
Yeah, it's hard to know. Hello, Ivan. How are you?
Ivan Drago just walked by. Andy Black just said hello to Ivan Drago.
Wonderful filler in her. See the way you link that all in there? Really tremendous.
That's why he's the town.
Yeah. No. I mean, you must have been, have you been doing this for a while.
Have you already played your day one, Mark?
No, I was going to interview you instead.
Oh, you can do that. You want to interview me?
No, it's all right. It's okay. Are you still in?
I'm not.
Are you?
All around the Rio, you know, there's going to be six thousand sort of little scenarios, roughly like that. Somebody goes, are you still in? And the other guy goes, no. And then the person goes, that kind of dynamic will be repeated, you know, again and again. And that's kind of what, in my mind, you know, if I was going to, like, you know, really boil it down, that's what makes the Main Event great.
The fact that you just get to abuse other people if you're still in.
Well, it's not an abuse. It's you're allowing them. You know, they don't feel great. They'd be knocked out. Yeah,
well, you can kick them.
It's like if you go to a funeral, right? If you go to a funeral, okay, maybe that's not the best example. But if you go to a funeral, you go to a funeral and somebody's died. If you actually go, you know, really sort of, you know, do horrified anxiety, get emotionally sort of upset with them, it doesn't help them. Yeah. Now, I'm not saying laughing at somebody when they've been knocked out is the best thing, but I'm just trying to make it.
I know that didn't help me.
Yeah. Well, I mean, nothing was going to help you, right? So
a hug from Andy Black. I believe a hug from Andy Black would have helped me.
Let's get a hug.
I don't want to hug him now. He laughed
at
me.
Why not?
He laughed at me.
But he's got to make it up to you.
No, I never hug on radio, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it doesn't have the same impact, the same effect.
Yeah, you don't get a sense of the liquid transfer.
What I could do is I could just do like the Buddhist hug. I could sit here and just like do a mantra in my mind and think about
that's
it.
Too consoling.
And think about it. And then that's what they call the Buddhist hug.
In all fairness, you'd need to have a mind to do a mantra. So we'd have to explore that.
We have to get into that avenue.
How do you think Gavin would do as a Buddhist?
How would Gavin do as a Buddhist? Well, he'd be grand, yeah. We'd take him. It's a bit like being Irish, you know. I mean, you know, we take anyone, you know. So Buddhism is like that. We'll take anyone, you know.
So Buddhism's kind of like poker. It's a low bar industry. You don't have to pretty much accept anyone.
It's accessible to kind of everybody. Yeah, that's it. Yes.
How many chips do you have in this event?
So many. I'd have to. Have we got them here?
I believe you're out. Not so fun when the rabbits got the gun.
No, I got like 23,700.
That's a lot.
It is quite a lot.
I would like that 20 people. How many chips did you have after day one of the 05 event when you came
to? Well, you only started with 10,000, so I had 40,000 after day one.
So you're doing considerably better than you are now.
Yeah. I mean, actually, this is the first time I've ever finished the first day of the main event with less chips than I started with.
Really? But how many times did you cash in the main event?
Well, I've been knocked out a lot of times. But that sounds better, doesn't it? Three, because this is actually an interesting fact, right? Which, like, if you get this on recorded, yeah, this is very important, yeah? Right? It could be, like, apocryphal, yeah? But 97, I finished 14th when Stu Younger won. You know, whenever the World Series was outside.
Yeah, the year that they did it outside.
Yeah, and they had stuff to stuff the cards.
Wouldn't that have been too fucking hot outside?
I know. No wonder they didn't do it again. You know?
Right.
And windy. I was waiting for the sandstorm to come over, you know. And then they really could have switched the cards around. And then 8 years later, you know, I came fifth, not third, in 2005. And now it's 8 years since then.
So this is the year.
So, I mean, you do the math.
Yeah.
I kind of suck at math, but...
Seems inevitable that you're going to probably bust in day two.
Probably, that's what usually happens. I hadn't thought of that. I was so certain that it wasn't going to be like that, you know? But there you go. You see, another thing is, right, when you've been knocked out, right, this is the positive way of looking at it. If you've been knocked out, all of your soldiers... Yeah, are now in there, in playing away.
Maybe with a better general.
Even you're not there. Yeah, right. You're the better general. You're right. The better general, and they're playing away in there. And then eventually, all the soldiers come together. Yeah, until one person has them. But the part of you is in there.
Your heart is always kind of in there in the chips. Somebody's
going
to end
up. I believe that I have a part of Greg Merson's 2012.
You absolutely do. Yeah,
we're all winners.
I feel much better now. Yeah, we're all winners. It's like in that Seinfeld episode.
And for all you know, your chips might have been the chips at the top of his stack, which he kept betting.
I know, which
is even more exciting as a notion, isn't it?
I'm actually with you.
It makes you quite thrilled.
That.
Yeah.
This is how the world of Andy Black works. Right there.
Yep.
In a nutshell.
Actually, it's probably one of the best. Analogies I've heard in a while.
Have you had sex recently?
I've been on the road for 6 weeks. So
that should be yes. So you've had a lot of sex.
Yes. All right.
Yes.
Yes.
So more than normal because you're married.
No. Right.
So, Andy, thanks for the time. Fifth Street, thank you for giving us the space.
That's
it.
I don't want to talk to me. I mean, I have so much more to say.
Yeah, but you can't lead.
You're actually, I don't think you can.
You can't lead with your big punch.
And you can just come on my show. You can say all